Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. We're in February already, and we're now making a podcast of what we're looking forward to in 2023. We could have done this earlier, I suppose, but there's still plenty of motorsport to come this year, and we're joined on the podcast today. It doesn't happen very often. Our group national editor, Stephen Licorice, is joining us. Thank you.
It's an honour to be on the podcast today, and there's plenty to look forward to this year, so plenty to talk about.
And Kevin Turner, who's written some words for the magazine recently on what you're looking forward to in 2023. It's going to be a cracking year of motorsport.
Well, I do spend quite a lot of my time writing about things that have happened in the past already. So I wanted to show that I do also pay attention to, or try and pay attention to, what's going on now. So yeah, I think there are some very cool things to look forward to this season.
Where do you want to start?
Well, should I say what I wrote in the magazine, or what I actually am looking forward to?
I mean, you can read it out if you want.
The reason I say that is, obviously what we've done is we've divvied it up. So everyone, can you just pick something to look forward to?
Yeah.
I wrote the first one. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that. Really.
I think the
ground effects rules have worked.
Yep.
We've got to get a bit more time for the cost cap wind tunnel restrictions to close the field up. But I live in hope that Mercedes will sort themselves out and the W14 will be able to fight Red Bull this year. And then we can have a Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, George Russell fight for the championship. I know I've missed out Ferrari. I would love them to be in the championship fight. I just don't believe it. But if they're in it as well, mega.
It was interesting watching Mercedes last year, or Toto Wolff last year, talk about their failings. They started off very supportive. As the year went on, and by no means did he throw anyone under the bus, but they just became more secure, I think, in talking about, look, obviously we're not going to win this year, so here's where we think we went wrong. But I don't still fully have that confidence that they came out of the blocks and were like, oh, we screwed this up, we know how to fix it. It seems like new rule set, and it's not a dead cert they're going to be back at the front this year. That's what we're all waiting to see, is can they do that? And they've got the people to do it. They've got the team. They've got the knowledge. You don't forget how to win in Formula One, but it's playing catch up now.
Exactly. They've got the continuity. There's no break there, which is usually some key element or personnel that you often get at the end of when a giant falls, if you like. We don't have that really. So I'm pretty confident that Mercedes will get back there. Whether they'll get back there in time for this season to fight for the championship, I hope so, because we need one. As I say, Ferrari, the other options, I think it's too early for the midfield to get into a championship, fighting situation. I think the race, we had some good races last year. I did a comparison recently of the 2021 versus 2022 races. The averages actually were pretty close, but I think if you think, well, 2021 had a championship fight, which is always going to make things seem a bit cooler and adds a bit of gravitas to events. I think we had a decent first season of ground effects rules. What we really needed and need this year is a championship fight.
The thought of having three teams genuinely competing for a title is perhaps the one thing F1's been missing for, well, decades really. It, in effect, have three genuinely competitive teams. So it would be a real thing to look forward to if that can happen this year. Whether it does, as Kev was alluding to, it might be a step too far for it to be this season. But just the fact we're even talking about it is a step in the right direction towards hopefully a more competitive and more interesting F1 year.
And this is why we love this time of year, isn't it? Because things could happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is why the F1 season preview is the best-selling issue of the magazine, as opposed to the F1 season review. In the review, we tell you what actually happened with lots of insight and depth, but you know what's happened. Yeah. You might not know why. Whereas that hope with the preview is, oh, maybe someone else will win this year. And that's the kind of the nice bit we're in until we rock up at testing and go, oh, Red Bull's half second clear or whatever. I mean, actually, they're never that obvious about it, so it probably won't be obvious until the first race. Poor old Alex Kalanorkas will have to be crunching the numbers. He's actually in the room at the moment to try and come up with an order in testing where everyone can just say, no, you got that wrong. It's like, well, you try sifting through all that data and the different fuel loads and tyres and goodness knows what else.
And with just a single test, it's going to be such an interesting year to see. No, I'm still convinced that it's going to be the cars roll out for qualifying at that first round and we see actually what everyone's going to be able to do. There's so much secrecy at the moment. It's not like we're going to get a huge steer, I don't think.
No, and also we get things like Red Bull always launch these days with a car that isn't the car.
Well, they won't.
So
yeah,
they don't give anything away.
Yeah.
Mercedes last year launched with a car that also wasn't the car.
They
went to the first test with a car that wasn't the car, which obviously backfired on them on this occasion. So, yeah, you can, and even when you do get the cars in testing, it's not the same until you rock up at the races. And then, of course, you can't see how it develops. You know, for the first 2, 3, 4 months of 2022, we thought we were having a championship fight between Red Bull and Ferrari, and then it all just went and disappeared. So, yeah, there's still many storylines to play out.
And, of course, there's a generation of drivers as well, which are exciting in Formula One. So they can't all become, well, maybe they could all take turns and all become world champions. But it's going to be criminal if Leclerc is not a world champion and Lando Norris and George Russell.
That's it. And the list just goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then we're going to get to see what Piastri's like. And then we might be saying this time next year, he deserves to be world champion one day. But they can't, you know, maybe they all will win a championship.
Yeah, if Lewis Hamilton can win an eighth world title, a kind of bounce back from the Abu Dhabi 2021 and then the problematic last year at Mercedes and then retire and go, right, I've got my eighth title, goodbye chaps.
I'd love
and
then, to see that. It'd be and then, amazing.
Yeah,
way
exactly.
To go.
And then I'd love to see the next few years just mixing up between, you know, Max, George, Lando, Charles. I mean, if we could arrange that, that would be quite good, wouldn't it? But I suspect that the Red Bull might be a bit too good for it to be quite that mixed. But you know.
Yeah. I would be a shame for Lewis Hamilton's career to peter out. So, because you know that Alonso's come off his peak, but it's not a downhill. Like, Alonso could have an amazing year this year with Aston Martin and be right back in the mix and fighting. I'd hate to see Lewis Hamilton.
I don't think Lewis will peter out.
I'm worried.
I think there'll be a crossover where George will surpass him as he's got on the way up and Lewis is on the way. I don't think he'll fall off a cliff. I think he'll stop before that happens.
I hope so. There's nothing worse than sort of, oh, no, he's like fighting for 14th.
Well, he's not going to go, oh, I'm not quite good enough for a front-running team. I'm going to go and join. Yeah,
No, it's this, isn't it? It's Merck or nothing.
It's going to be, exactly, yeah.
So, all right, let's move on. What do you want to talk about next? What's next on our list? What do you fancy? Anything? What are you looking forward to this year?
Well, while F1 has got a fairly sort of stable set of rules, it's all changing various other elements of the international motorsport scene, and I think one of the most exciting ones has to be Le Mans and what's happening there with sports car racing entering what could be one of its greatest eras. Who knows, we shall see, but just the fact that the number of different manufacturers that we've got coming in, we've had the introduction of the LMDH rules with the Daytona 24 hours recently, so first insight into what those cars are like, but then bringing them in against the sort of true Le Mans hypercars of Toyota, of Peugeot, and then seeing what Ferrari have got up their sleeve as well. It's a really exciting prospect and should finally mean there's actually a genuine multi-car fight for the win at Le Mans, which has been missing for quite a few years now.
It is a new era, but also it's kind of coming in stages. Like some of the cars we've seen already for the last couple of years, this year is going to be massive. Then future years, Lamborghini, even teams like McLaren, maybe middle of the decade, we could see. So,
but this is the big one.
This is the biggest.
The rule change. Yeah, you know, unless you were in sports car racing, you won't have noticed because it's like, oh, it was Toyota have been winning, and now it's Toyota still winning. Yeah. So although we've got the hypercar rules and the LMH cars out there and have had for a couple of years, we're waiting for Ferrari, Porsche. You know, we've just had the Daytona 24 Hours. I thought it was interesting that it ended up really being a fight between Cadillac and Acura, who had Daytona prototype international cars last year. The newcomers to the party, Porsche and BMW, who we're kind of more excited about, they kind of had a bit of a mare. Like, they both showed pace. I think they were all within 8 tenths in qualifying. So that balance of performance is working well. The big thing will be the balance of performance between the LMH cars, the bespoke cars like the Ferrari and the Toyota, and the LMDH cars, which are the off-the-shelf, oh, I've got a Dallara chassis and I'm putting my badging and engine and stuff in it, and getting those balanced. You know, I think that's the thing I'm not looking forward to, is the, some people think the journalists love all the politics and the argument. I'm not really like that. I just prefer the racing and the track and what the drivers say. So there will be some politics that go on, but it's going to be a fantastic spectacle. We're going to go from having 5 cars in the top class to 17 or 18, depending on a couple of factors. I mean, that we've not had that for, I mean, even in the LMP1 days, there were no customer cars. So you're looking to, you know, probably into the 90s. Or early 2000s, when you've had that many front running, you know, top level cars, and it's the big names, and it's the centenary. It's going to be mega.
Talking of centenary, what do you think Le Mans can do this year to engage the wider motorsport fan and make it a bigger event?
Well, I think some of the names of the companies that are involved this year, just having Ferrari back, that's such a huge selling point to the race, and they've really got to make the most of having these teams on board now and really sort of tap into the sort of global fan appeal that they have and put sports car racing back on the map, where, as Kev's sort of been saying over the past few years, it's basically been inevitable that a Toyota was going to win Le Mans. This time, we don't know what's going to happen. And that excitement has got to really be built up and sort of tapped into, I think.
But I think the challenge, actually, I agree with that, but I think the challenge isn't so much Le Mans. I think Le Mans will be a sellout and packed, and like the hotels are really difficult to book and all the rest of it. Because we've seen from web numbers and mag sales, the interest in Le Mans was really high, even when we knew a Toyota was going to win and there was nothing there. You know, Le Mans itself is bigger than sports car racing, and that's the challenge that WEC has got, is to use that interest to actually make people pay attention the rest of the year to the other rounds. It would help, I think, if they had a round in Britain. Unfortunately, they don't, because I think there's a fan base here for sports car racing. So that's the challenge that they've got, is to make people care about sports car racing when it's not Le Mans. But I think that they've got, as Stephen said, they've got the best opportunities. Like, you've got Ferrari and Porsche. I mean, come on.
That's it. If it's not going to happen now, it's not really going to happen, is it? If we're being honest, this is the chance to really sort of catapult it into sort of more mainstream.
The only other thing you would do that could do that is if you go, right, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton have to do Le Mans. You're not having your super license until you sign up with an LMH or LMDH for that one weekend, or for the championship or something. That's the only way it would actually elevate it any further than the names that we've just talked about.
But in bringing together US and WEC, in terms of, yeah, it's all nice and swapping corner names and et cetera, et cetera. But is it like that? That's nice. But are they doing do you think it's doing the right thing by bringing those regulations together and seeing similar cars on track?
I think so. In theory, you're just opening it up to more people, more interest. But as Kev has sort of touched on, it's the political side that goes with that, how the two compare. It will be difficult, and there will be, people won't be happy. Some of the teams won't be sort of satisfied with the way that's going, but that's inevitable. But it's just good that we're in that position finally, where there's been agreement, some common ground has been found, and we can now actually have those sort of arguments almost about what is the right sort of comparison between the two. But it's just good to be in that position where there is the volume of different cars to have that argument.
Yeah, it makes it viable for the manufacturers as well to get involved. But the downside, of course, is that one of sports car racing's problems is it's too complicated.
There's a lot of
different technical rules, different driver gradings, and if you're just taking a passing interest, it's very easy to go, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. I was watching the Daytona with my kids and trying to explain, well, what does the red panel mean and the green panel? And I was like, well, that's that class. And like GTD, the only difference is the drivers. And the GTD beat the GTD Pro cars. Yes. And it's like, so that should have been faster, but actually they didn't win. And you're like, right, okay. So it's quite complicated. And of course, with hypercar class, ideally you would have had one set of regulations across Europe or the World Endurance Championship and IMSA. But of course, they've had different routes there. So you've immediately, even when they go, you know, at the start of a new era, we've got two top classes that they're trying to balance out. So, you know, I don't know if sports car racing can really solve that problem of making it simplified and keep the manufacturers on board. I think we've probably got to as good a point as we're probably going
to
get.
Yeah, I know we have a lot of listeners to this podcast in the US, and just, you know, to remind you guys, we don't have Acura as a brand here. So we'd buy Hondas, but we wouldn't. You can't go down to a dealership and buy an Acura. So in terms of a marketing exercise, so you're not going to start shipping cars around the world. Or what's the point of that?
So. No, exactly. So for someone like Porsche, it's perfect because it's both markets.
It's going to sell them loads of road cars. Yeah.
But with Acura, they have to go, and Cadillac in the other direction. Yeah. But with Acura, as you say, they've got to go, well, we need to rebrand it as a Honda to racing. And then that probably needs to go through various layers of bureaucracy for that to happen. So it's much easier for some manufacturer, and someone like BMW, of course, they are taking both markets seriously, but they've started late, so they're concentrating on IMSA, so they'll be arriving a year later. But I mean, it's going to be lots of top quality drivers. I mean, there's some sensational driving at Daytona at the weekend, and we're only going to add to that with we haven't even mentioned Peugeot. Yes. You know, Peugeot coming back with their wingless wonder, which would be quite cool if that works, because the cars look different. You know, one of those very boring criticisms of F1 is that the cars look the same, which actually, I don't think they look exactly the same. If you painted them white, you could have a stab at the differences. But with the sports cars, they really are different now. You know, the Peugeot, you paint that white, you know that that is definitely the Peugeot. And the Toyota is always the very kind of pragmatic, fairly boring looking one. The Ferrari looks cool. So yeah, they're very distinctive. I think that's why we've spent so long talking about it. It should be the start of a golden era, shouldn't it?
What we're looking forward to in 2023, two rounds of Formula E are under our belts already. But let's talk a little bit about that, because we have a new car with a Gen 3 car. We've seen big names leave and others enter as well in Formula E. And of course, a lot of the road car manufacturers, whether they are doing big numbers of electric vehicles yet or not, that is the roadmap. That's where a lot of the regulation is going. And, you know, EU are banning combustion, and a lot of at country level they are as well. So there's going to be investment in this. I think that from a spectacle point of view, we were talking to Karun Chandhok recently, and he's like, I'm less bothered about the spectacle, and he wants the racing. But I think it's always a good spectacle that they put on. Stephen, what are your thoughts on how the Formula E started the year with these new Gen 3 cars?
Well, the cars, I think just the nature of them, they look more, it's more interesting to watch, just because they don't look, the speed isn't as obvious. They look more exciting to watch. There's more sort of nervousness to them. They seem a bit more skittish, and that really helps just sort of the overall appeal of it, just to make it look that bit more entertaining to watch. And yes, we've seen some of the big name teams leave, but there's still quite a few in there, such as Porsche, who obviously had a sort of interesting start to the year, and it's still got that mix of new names coming in, like Maserati, for example, just having brands like that associated with it. So there's still that sort of good mix of different car manufacturers got their names on those cars, and it's still got a strong mix of drivers as well. So that's something, and as we were sort of saying before with sports cars, it's another new era beginning, and it'd be interesting to see how this sort of plays out over the rest of the season.
Should Formula E just be a support series of Formula One? Now that the batteries are becoming more energy dense, I quite like driver swaps back in the first. That's quite funny to watch.
Car swaps?
Driver swap, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you getting the one that's got a flat battery, I'm getting the new one.
So the car swaps, let me try again. I quite like those. But look, as the technology is improving and you can end up, you go, if you wanted to go to more traditional circuits, as it were, like, is that what does Formula E need to do to capture a wider attention? Because as much as it might have been difficult recently to watch it, at least here on live telly, I tend to use YouTube anyway for stuff like that. So what does Formula E do this year to propel itself up?
Ever since it's launched, a group of people just aren't interested in it because of its very nature and what it is. But the world of electric vehicles is only going to become more and more prevalent as the various different government rules come into place. So Formula E has got to become more mainstream, given this is the sort of one of the key directions that the world is heading in. And I think if the sort of whole broadcast arrangement was better and there was more sort of promotion to that, it would help. But your idea of whether it should be on F1 weekends, I think that's probably a step too far. I don't think that's necessarily the answer to that problem.
I don't, you know, if I wanted to watch a W Series race, I didn't immediately think, oh good, I can tune into Sky Sports F1 and it'll be somewhere on the coverage of that weekend.
It's an interesting idea, not really pondered before. I mean, it would have the advantage of obviously getting more eyeballs on it, so that would be good. I like the idea of having a mixed up support categories on the F1 bill as well. Like, they're two, well, we want a few different things on and off that bill, I think. The downside is, you know, they're still not quick. So if you've just seen an F1 practice session and then the electric cars come out, I think that could undermine them a bit. Obviously, they are getting quicker. They will continue to get quicker, I'm sure. You know, Gen 4, Gen 5, you know, I don't know how long it takes before they'll, you know, be right up there in the power stakes. So I quite like the idea, but it might be counterproductive because we'll go, oh, yeah, you see things on YouTube and then people have done, like, use models and you know, computer games and stuff to do comparisons. And I saw one the other day, I was like, oh, Gen 3 is still miles off. It's like, well, yeah, but they're not trying to be as quick as F1. Like, everything looks slow compared to an F1 car. So it's not really very fair. So I don't know if that would be, and they'd be slower than an F2 car.
Yeah, and it just, so it that might comparison is just too obvious, isn't it?
Even though, of course, the drivers, like, one of the things I'm enjoying at the moment is Jake Dennis being out there. I think he's one of the best British drivers that we don't really talk, well, Autosport talks about, but in the wider world, we don't talk about. Yeah, it was nice last year to give Tom Blomqvist, who won the Daytona 24 Hours, to link to our, you know, last year we gave him a bit of a big up in our national, our British competition driver of the year alongside the three F1 Brits. And I'd kind of like to see Jake in the mix as well, because he's been a good performer at that sort of level for a long time. But I think it's probably worth saying as well, the other thing that, I don't know, you can look forward to it, but I think we should give FE some credit for, or maybe it's luck, for not having the big accidents with the new braking system that we thought might happen. Like, I know it was a bit of a concern, but maybe touch wood, they've sort of got away with it.
Yeah. I know what you mean by the sort of the clarity of decision making from a technical perspective of, we think we need some emergency brakes, but we're okay to go racing without them. And also, I'd love to see Formula E do well in terms of being a halo for electrification. So I think that could possibly democratize motorsport. Now, like, I mean, my lad is 4, but if he showed an interest in karting or progressing, that would be fabulously expensive that we couldn't afford when you get to a decent level. But you look at what Rob Smedley's doing with trying to get kids in electric karts, and the idea that it could make things cheaper if the costs are under control. But it's got to come from the top. I don't think that's not a ground up. That's not a football in schools thing. That is with motorsport. It's got to come from looking at the top and being, I want to be a Formula E driver one day, Dad.
I think also that there's there are a lot of sort of old times, if you like, who will say, oh, I remember when you could rock up at Brands Hatch with your Formula Ford on the back of a transit van and compete, and it was more. And they're right, but also you can't undo what's. The progress. The reason that doesn't happen now, one of the reasons is because somebody with a Formula Ford went, actually, it'd be really good if I had a paid mechanic to help me. And then it's like, oh, a paid engineer. Oh, the car's a bit quick. Oh, they're winning a lot. Oh, a factory team with a few mechanics and a proper team that's set up to run the car for you. And they've got a suspension expert and an engine expert. And eventually you've got these big teams. And obviously those teams are expensive because you've got to pay for people. But it's quicker. So motorsport will go towards the quicker thing. We saw Jonathan Palmer try with Formula 2 and Formula Palmer Audi to show, well, if it's centrally run, we can cut costs. And he was correct. That did do that. But it was, as you say, it was out of line with the rest of motorsport. So it didn't matter. So people are like, well, I need to work with the team because in F1, they work with teams. So I need to go and do that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Let's talk about WRC. And again, another sport that if you know it and if you watch it, you know it's absolutely brilliant. And that it's just finding that coverage. And I don't want to pay for a subscription to a premium service just to get into it. They do a pretty good job on social media. And having a new youngest world champion as well does no harm. We've had one round so far as of recording this. But Stephen, you looking forward to rallying this year at the top tier of rallying? See Cali Rovanpera defend his title?
Yeah, well, he's the one, the sort of new kid on the block, so to speak. He made such an impact last year on route to taking the title, and some of his achievements at such a young age, considering how, and it's noticeable just how much younger he is than all of the other rally drivers over time. I mean, I think it was Colin McRae that he took over the record as the youngest champion from, and that just shows you how different he is compared to all of the other drivers that have been competing in the series recently. To come straight in at such a young age, be on the pace, win a notoriously difficult championship to win, has shown his true ability, and it'll be interesting to see now how he follows up from that, whether he can continue that momentum and challenge, who knows, the likes of the records that have been set before from the two Sebastians.
Well, that's it. If he does well this year, then it's ominous.
Yes.
If he dominates this year, it's ominous. But you've got decent drivers, Tanaka M Sport. He's got the right car, and he's up against some drivers that were doing a full campaign, not a part-time campaign. That's going to be interesting.
The crucial thing is Tanaka and M Sport. I don't think there's anyone else in the field that can beat Rovanpera consistently enough, except possibly Tanak. So it'd be great for him to effectively do a Sebastian Ogier, go to M Sport, you do a great job to keep going. I know there's some sort of Ford assistance, but they're not a big factory team in the way that Hyundai and Toyota are. And, you know, Ogier went there and for me showed his class by winning the World Championship with effectively a privateer outfit, really. And I'd love to see Tanak. If he can just take the fight to Rovanpera and Toyota, that'd be mega. You know that Hyundai will be there and thereabouts. They'll win some rallies. I just can't see anyone on that team that's going to win a world championship at them now. Thierry Neuville fan, sorry about that. But I mean, he if you look at his, he's almost contractually obliged to finish second or third in the championship.
I think you or I called him always the bridesmaid, never the bride recently. And no Neuville fan turned up to on my doorsteps. I think we got away with that.
He will do some brilliant rallies during the course of the season. He'll also have some drama. He'll have a few moans. He'll finish second or third. I think we need Tanak to... and maybe actually M Sport. Yeah, we know Tanak can win a world championship. M Sport's done in the past. Can they gel and get that Puma working? I guess that's the thing I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it's almost like what we were talking about with F1 earlier, where you need those three teams to be truly sort of competing at the front on a regular basis. And if Tanak can elevate M Sport to that level, then that'd be brilliant. And it just adds to the intrigue, doesn't it? Rather than being another series where Toyota are walking away.
Is it bad that I also really like it when, maybe it's my age, when Sebastian Ogier rocks up and wins on his part-time? Yeah. I just think that's really fun. Obviously, Loeb did it last year and he's properly ancient now. He's even older than me. he rocks up and beats them. Okay, so Ogier should have won in Monte in 2022 and did win it this year. The two Sebs are just great. I love it when they rock up and do it. You do kind of think, the trouble is with that is it just reminds you, are we actually missing something? I think we are. But then how long do the established megastars hang around? It's the Lewis Hamilton question.
Yeah.
Do you want them to get beaten or do you want them to quit while they're still ahead? It's interesting. But yeah, we need Tanak versus Rovanpera. That's what we want.
I think the cars are great and these new hybrid cars, I think, good to watch. Still sound good. They're still raspy enough.
Rallying on boards are awesome. That's the one thing that lets Formula One down a little bit. Although, and not because of the cameras and stuff. They've done loads of great work around that and helmet cams and all the rest of it.
Everyone's got a helmet cam in Formula One this year. So we'll see more of that.
That's all great. But this, just the impression of speed you get with the rally, it looked hard. Yes. When you're getting on board of rallying, it looks like you look at that and go, oh my God, I could never do this.
Yes, because they're always on the edge of a massive shunt.
You know, the tree, lamppost, building, spectators, car in the ditch, dog running across the road, whatever it is. F1 and circuit racing looks easy. Obviously, we know that it isn't at all. Mm. But for a sort of raw, oh my God moment, looking at some rally footage, or even if you're stood by the bank in Finland and it comes fly past at head height 120 miles an hour, whatever, you think, my God, these guys are nutters.
Yep, yeah. And I see that comment online a lot. It's like, why do Formula One onboards of Senna look so scary? And well, there's lots of reasons. Because the technology's improved now, so everything's nice and stabilised. It's got little gyros and nothing's shaky. The circuits are bigger. Like, the circuit, there's perspective. The camera angles are elongated. There's lots of reasons. They do a really good job of giving it an impression of speed. And the Formula One coverage is fantastic. But the tech is so good, the cars don't look fast.
Yeah, and also the thing that, the camera obviously, as you say, moves around, but also, like, gear changing.
And that's also another thing. Yeah, seeing one hand on the wheel.
You can see an arm up and down.
Yeah, that's also a big
whereas
thing.
Obviously with paddle shift, which of course the rally cars have as well. Yeah. But with the rally cars, it's sideways.
Yeah.
It's what you can see out through the window. Just looks like... And of course, because they're sideways, if you're looking forward, they're pointing at a building or a group of spectators or whatever it is. And you think, oh my word.
I think on one of the cars last year, maybe on Lando's car, they were using the pedal box cam quite a lot.
That's quite cool.
I really like that because that really gets across... the talent involved in balance. And other than the on-screen graphics show you what they're doing, but when you can see their feet working with their hands, I think that's a really big difference. So more of that, please. We're talking about Formula One, the support series. What do you think about that building excitement this year?
Well, it's interesting. We were talking earlier about whether Formula E should be a support series. And actually, there's a little bit of a sort of change this year in the sense that F2... will be heading over to Melbourne for the Australian Grand Prix, which is a great sort of different track for the drivers to experience. Traditionally, those F2 and F3 have focused on the sort of European events and then some of the end of season ones. So to have them in Melbourne, a new challenge for the drivers, a very different sort of track to the majority that they'll be competing on, that would be really interesting to see. And also we've got F3 taking to the streets of Monaco. So again, just throwing that these more challenges, more variety for these drivers and getting giving them another chance to sort of sample the sort of variety of different tracks that they could well be racing on if they progress all the way up to F1 in the coming years.
Yeah.
And we've seen how there's been quite a few sort of graduates from F2, F3 making it into F1 for this year. So it's now down to that next generation to sort of prove they're the standout star ready to fill in the sort of next gaps.
The coverage is good. There's a really good little documentary series. They made a few of those now on the F1 TV. But they follow a driver and episode and stuff. So they do the right things to promote it, I think.
And having said that, I was going to look forward in this one. I also like...
you can't resist.
To suggest that the thing... it's cool that F3 is going back to Monaco because it's got the historical, 1964, Jackie Stewart winning the support race. It's had a lot of good winners over the years, the F3 support race at the Monaco Grand Prix, so it's quite nice they're going back there. And also there's some British interest as well for both categories. We've got Ollie Bearman stepping up to Formula 2 with Prema, and I'm sure they'll give him a good car. And Zach O'Sullivan, obviously won our Aston Martin WRDC award not last year, the year before, getting a proper shot with Prema in F3. So there's some nice British interest and obviously talent from elsewhere as well. So yeah, I think F2 and F3 looks quite interesting at this stage.
We might whip through some of these a little bit quicker, but that doesn't mean these aren't fantastic series. Certainly for me, MotoGP is not a blind spot, but it's something that when I see it, I love it, and I need to remind myself to watch more MotoGP. It's about rallying, and that it's properly on the edge of.
You can see them working again.
Yeah.
It's the being able to see the virtuosity, isn't it? It's just easier with rallying and with the bikes because they're hanging off them and the contact patches, a postage stamp, and they're doing some colossal speed. And obviously they overtake because they take up a lot less room. Lewis Duncan, our MotoGP man, guru, correspondent, whatever, he's actually he's picked out the rise of the other Marquez, so not Mark Marquez, but he reckons it's time for younger brother Alex to have a you know, to star possibly. I'm not so into the MotoGP side of things, so I'm just waiting for Marc Marquez to come back to his best and nail it again. Again, maybe that's an age thing. I like my past masters to come back and show them all how it's done. But I mean, MotoGP always provides some great action, doesn't it?
That's it. You know, you guaranteed close racing. Mm. It's just such a dramatic sort of form of the sport to watch. And yeah, it should be another really interesting year seeing both Marquezes, how they perform, whether Mark can sort of get back to the sort of unbelievable achievements that we've seen him be capable of before, and then see how Alex develops as well. So it should be another interesting season there too.
See if anyone wants to actually win the title this year, to like put one hand on the trophy at least. Should we talk a bit about IndyCar?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, no, David Mauricio Lopez has picked out the... Well, because again, it's that talking about the big three and the big two. Like in IndyCar, we talk about the big three, but really it's a two. Mm. If you look, it's now a decade since a driver outside of Ganassi and Penske won the Drivers' Championship. And we've been looking to Andretti, but actually David has picked out, you know, the McLaren operation, the Arrow McLaren operation, which has now got ex-Andretti man Alexander Rossi, ex-F1, if you remember that far back, although he never had the very good machinery to really show his wares there. But Felix Rosenqvist and Pato O'Ward, and that's a pretty handy trio. Mm. And I'm sure they'll win races. I think McLaren will win races. Can they beat the big two to win the championship? I think that's a bit of a stretch. It's time Joseph Newgarden won again, actually. He's been a bit unfortunate recent years not to have taken the title. He's missed out narrowly. He's a class act. We know Penske are a quality. So that would be my tip.
Let's talk touring cars. Can they relive that big battle again? Almost certainly. Touring cars is so competitive. What are you looking forward to this year?
Well, that's the thing. When you sort of say things you look forward to, one thing you can almost always expect is a close British Touring Car Championship title battle. And we had one last year. We're probably going to have one again this year. And it should be really interesting to see how that all develops over the course of the season. But what I'm personally really looking forward to is a bit more variety on the British Touring Car Championship support bill. We've talked about with F1 and what they're doing, and there's a bit of a change this year. So we've had Ginetta leave the BCC bill after over a decade as being a sort of staple of those meetings. So now there's been some space created, and there's going to be a variety of different club series that are going to get the chance to sort of shine on the bigger stage. We've got very close racing for Caterhams. They're going to be at one of the rounds at Silverstone. There's going to be Radicals at a couple of the events. The Mini 7s and Mini Midlias that we've provided some brilliant racing on a couple of guest outings in the past. They're going to be at Thruxton, which is a circuit that just lends itself to those cars, and they're just slipstreaming down into the club chicane. And then perhaps one of the most exciting of all of them is the Legends series. These are sort of really sort of mini sort of American style little pocket rockets, and they should provide some really, really close racing. And they're actually, because they've got three visits on the BCC bill this year, they're creating a separate championship just for those three meetings, so that for the sort of regular competitors, it's mixed things up, it's sort of split the season in half. Just having this variety of different series on the bill should be really interesting for fans. It should add something different that's been missing in the last couple of years, and it's certainly something I'm looking forward to. The existing series, the British F4, the Porsche Carrera Cup, the Mini Challenge, they should be really close and really strong to watch as well. But it's just the extra variety that some of these club championships bring that really stands out.
It's almost a better balance now, isn't it? There's kind of a bit more of a club element to it. And I think Legends is a perfect fit.
Smaller cars, the better.
They're smaller. like a British touring car crowd likes overtaking a bit of door locking. Yeah. Like Legends will be on a different level for that. Because the British touring cars, you know, I know it's got a reputation, but actually the guys at the front, they're clean and, you know, most of the moves are pretty sensible, but Legends would be brilliant like that, and the Minis as well. But it's a while since I've seen a Legends race, but I think that it's a really good addition. Actually, it's almost Ginetta have almost done the British Touring Car package a favour by making that happen. I don't know whether it worked for Ginetta. Obviously, we hope that it will. I'm looking forward to some of those as well.
Being respectful to obviously people who are at the beginning of their career or just improving their driving skills, there is, with things like Legends, a bigger spread of talent over the grid. So when you get a mixed up grid then, you can't help but see some great racing and some great overtakes.
That's it. And Legends traditionally adopts this format where the grid is just picked out of a hat anyway. So you've always got the sort of nature of faster drivers trying to fight their way through the pack, and that just adds to the further to the excitement, and those races should really be something special to watch.
You know, Ginetta Jr. was probably outside of BTC the most popular. I think that's what the fans came back, they went and got their burger and something else, and they come back and watched the Ginetta Jr. race because it was always really close for those very reasons. And I think that they've kind of doubled their money there, haven't they? They've gone, right, we've not got the Ginetta Jr. guys and girls, but we've got Minis and Legends. Like, there's no way they're going to have boring races with those.
And the Minis as well give people that impression of, well, I could have a go at that. You probably couldn't, in fairness. I think that sometimes watching stuff like that, I think, oh, I'd love to get some proper coaching and give it a go. I'd be terrible. Who am I kidding?
Yeah, but Minis are accessible and you could give it a go. You just wouldn't win.
Just wouldn't, like, be terrible.
Because in almost every club championship, and there are, I don't know what the last count was, Stephen, we must be up to about 250 by now, but the people at the front know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're good drivers.
It's not easy to win.
Yeah.
No, definitely. And there's some real quality among that mini field. We've had people like past touring car champion Andrew Jordan competing in that series. And the fight at the front of that is seriously competitive. But it's affordable enough that further down, particularly in the sort of Mini 7 S class, which is a more sort of slightly more basic machine, that it is a sort of realistic series for people to get involved with who are sort of just sort of starting out on that motorsport journey.
So go and get your race license, Martin.
I know, I'm just gonna do that. So tempting to say to my wife, I've never played golf, I've never had an expensive hobby, I don't smoke, let me spend some money on motorsport. Yeah. You know, she'd still say no, but.
And this is a good segue in as well, because if we had another all sport driver, you could compete in the All Sport 3 Hours.
Looking forward to this.
Which we are bringing back. Which first ran in 1957, I think, and has been won by such people as Jim Clark. Mm. It stopped after 1964. This makes me feel old because I was around for the resurrection in 2007 when the Historic Sports Car Club came and said, can we do this again? And we're like, yeah, okay. So we got it up and running, and then it went away again, and now it's coming back for 2023. It's in April, I think, isn't it?
Yes, 23rd of April.
Yeah, 23rd of April, which for pre-1966 GT cars, so yep. The sorts of cars that would have been in the event back in the day. At Snetterton on the 200 circuit, which is the most similar to the old Snetterton layout. And it should be good fun. The Historic Sports Car Club are putting it together, but they actually opened it up to cars and competitors from other clubs. It's not meant to be an HSCC thing. It's meant to be bigger than that. It's to attract lots of clubs together and just have a really cool get together of 60s GT cars, really. So that will be one of my first meetings of the year. I will be going.
Really?
I think I shall go along to that. Yeah.
I've been driving past Netton a fair bit lately. I can point out there's a new Greggs and McDonald's on the main road.
Other chains are available.
Since last time I drove past, brand new service station for all of your pasty incubator needs. But what a great circuit.
And lots of people think it's difficult to get to, but it actually isn't. They've improved the roads a lot over the years. It's quite a, quite a
once
fast
you're off
black
the motorway, it's duly all the way.
It's fine.
It used to be that the road got smaller.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, not like that now. I mean, I am slightly concerned about the weather in April at Snetterton. Yeah. It might be a tad cold, but I'm going to give it a try.
Now, we've got plenty we could talk about, but what are some of the things you want to highlight, Stephen, on the race?
That's the beauty of national motorsport, really, is the breadth of it. Yeah. And there's so much to look forward to in the UK this year. But one of the sort of new events that's been introduced is an event at Brands Hatch called Super Touring Power Festival, which is a celebration of one of the BTCC's most sort of popular eras, the Super Touring era of the 1990s. And there will be races for these Super Tourer cars. A sort of dedicated series was reintroduced for them last year, which didn't have the sort of strongest numbers, But having a sort of a premier event like this should really help attract more of these cars to come out and join the grid. But it's not just about super touring. There will be a wide range of touring cars, right from the sort of very beginnings of the BTCC in the 1960s, right all the way up to some of the S2000 cars, which are also eligible for the Super Tourer series. So it should be a really great event. Some of the past stars from the Super Touring era might be racing, might be there attending. And it's just, it's another example of these sort of themed events that Brands Hatch and it's the circuit operator MSV have putting on, just to try and gather more interest from spectators and the sort of general public.
In our recent magazine feature on this, we also mentioned hill climbing, the Clio Sport Championship, GB3 title battle, Mazda MX-5 Super Cup. I fancy you going that as well.
Got to get your license. I do feel we should mention Goodwood as well.
Goodwood 25th revival.
So it's the 25th anniversary and the 25th because they missed one, so they've got it in line, which is lovely.
Yeah, brilliant.
Because I got a bit fed up with people celebrating their anniversary at the wrong time. So this one matches completely. So it's the 75th anniversary since it was opened the first time. 25th anniversary of the first revival in 1998, which I went to. And it's just a fantastic place to watch racing. I try and put either the members meeting or the revival or both into my diary quite early. And the Silverstone Classic, which is now going to be called the Silverstone Festival, because obviously that's not confusing, as we've got a Goodwood Festival. Thanks very much for that. That'll be mega as well.
Because we are recording this podcast at Silverstone. If you want to come here, really interesting, a variety of things on track, but bring the family. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. They really have made that event. They called it the festival, and it really is a festival.
It's enormous, yeah. And of course, Silverstone is also 75 this year. So yes. lots of anniversaries. So I'm not quite sure how I'm going to fit all these anniversaries into the pages of the magazine on the website, but we'll give it a try.
We'll find that. But certainly to go back to to Revival, I highly recommend it's that and do the dress up, go full for it, and you will absolutely love.
I might even take the family this year.
Yeah,
the time has come.
It's a great event. Get
them dressed up, take some friends.
Really friendly event, and are you looking forward to? Will you get to any things like the Goodwood or the Revival, Stephen?
Might not be able to make those exact meetings, but I want to try and have a sort of wider range of club meetings on my sort of calendar this year. And one of my favourites I went to last year was the Mini Festival at Brands Hatch, which is some great racing from a whole range of different minis, and that's the beauty of UK motorsport, club motorsport. There's just something for everyone, whether it's circuit racing, whether it's hill climbing, which you briefly mentioned, whether it's drag racing, rallycross, rallying. There's just so many different disciplines out there and so many different events that are right on our doorstep, and you don't have to pay huge amounts to go and watch.
Yeah, club racing sort of a bit of an undiscovered gem, really, for a lot of motorsport fans, I think. For all those reasons, Stephen's goals. I feel like because Stefan Mackley isn't here, I feel like I should step in and mention that the Formula Ford Festival and the Waltase Trophy at Silverstone in October and November, respectively, will probably be mega. They normally are. I know they had some problems last year with the festival and the way it finished, but by and large, those Formula Ford events where they get all the top Formula Fordsters together is usually worth watching as well.
All right, thank you very much for that. That is our look forward to 2023 and covering just some of the stuff that the team here are really looking forward to. You can check that out in the 2nd of Feb issue of Autosport magazine. I'm sure it'll be online at some point as well. Thank you very much for listening today. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.